Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Crystal Quest Show with John Dennis Govert and Happy Hara on HealthyLife.net, positive talk radio, where we explore crystal energy, astrology, earth mysteries, metaphysics, ancient cultures, and spirituality. I am your co-host, Happy Hara, and I'm here with our other co-host, John Dennis Govert. Today, we are diving into our ancient origins and mysterious archaeological sites. Here in North America, we have a rich Native American archaeological history that seems to have been largely destroyed, buried, or hiding in plain sight. Over the past few years, John Dennis and I have been investigating Native American mound sites that are concentrated in the southeastern part of the United States. Mounds are like earth pyramids, and the largest one in North America is Cahokia, which is a multi-mound complex just outside of St. Louis. For a sense of scale, Cahokia's largest mound has a base that is larger than the base of the Great Pyramid, and it's the largest pyramid structure north of Central America. Most Americans are not aware of these sites, and like the Central American pyramids, there is some mystery as to what the mounds were used for and why they exist. To add to their mystery, many of the mound sites seem to be aligned with solstices and stars. We have with us today Dr. Gregory Little, who will help us explain this mysterious archaeological site. Dr. Little has done extensive research on a variety of topics that ties into human origins and ancient civilizations through archaeological research. Dr. Little is the author of more than 30 books, including Denisovan Origins, and another book called Origins of the Gods, both of which he co-authored with Andrew Collins. He has also written books about Edgar Cayce in Atlantis, and he's written other books about Native American mounds and earthworks. His research has been featured in the National Geographic Channel, the Discovery and History Channels, and other places. He currently lives in Memphis, Tennessee. I want to also mention that he has carried out extensive specialized research into Native American mounds in North America and has examined them archaeologically, culturally, and spiritually. We are very grateful to have Dr. Little with us today. Greg, welcome to the Crystal Quest Show.
Well, thank you, Happy. It is a pleasure to meet you, and hello to John Dennis. Hi there.
Hello.
We'll see where this goes, but it's always a pleasure to talk about it. I definitely like talking about it.
Yeah, you know, we love the information-rich book that you've written. I must say what has recently triggered me to invite you to the show is a post that you actually wrote on social media where you were doing research with dowsing rods at Native American mounds. And I think you even said that you're writing a book about this research. And am I reporting this correctly?
Well, you're in the ballpark. Okay, so the first time... you're in the ballpark. The first time that I ever did dowsing rods was in Arizona, and I was at what's called the Bradshaw Ranch, which is the original Skinwalker Ranch. It has the same kind of things going on. It has an older history. The same people investigated it. And, again, I had never used dowsing rods. I had an opportunity. Andrew Collins was there. There was a filmmaker and an electrical engineer that was there, and they were recording electromagnetic and electrical frequencies coming from the ground. And I just decided, okay, they had a set, and I did it. It wound up being filmed. I've posted that, and The original that was done by the filmmaker, that'll be posted at some point. I'm not sure what they're doing with it. But yeah, that was my first time. I am always doing research on the effects of electromagnetic fields and variations in those fields on human consciousness. And the idea is that a lot of these ancient sites have various earthworks, mounds, pyramids, rock formations, and so on. And as people move through those areas physically, as you physically move, you are subjected to very subtle variations in electromagnetic fields, which could, under some circumstances, alter your consciousness a bit. In fact, we know that that's what Native American shaman and medicine people did at a lot of the mound and earthwork sites. They used hallucinogens, and they did deliberately move people from one area to another through earthworks, walled earthworks, where the movements of large groups of people were carefully controlled, so they'd have one experience after another. But yes, I am working on projects in that. That particular one that you saw was done out in Arizona. That wasn't done at what you would call a mound site, but it was done at an ancient Native American site, absolutely. So,
Well, I mean, what intrigues me about, of course, you doing work with, you know, dowsing rods and, you know, an earth energy. So I've been visiting mound sites for the past few years. It's been really kind of nice because while COVID was shut down, I could still access the mound.
Oh, so I
did a whole bunch of travel. It's like I almost had time to finally do this.
Cool.
And so I had my dowsing rods with me, and I started seeing energetic patterns like around the base of the mounds and on top of the mounds. I started seeing these very similar patterns at different mound sites. So I was kind of excited to see that you were kind of doing work with energy and dowsing rods too. Because, you know, not a lot of people are talking about, say, the energy at mounds. You know, I mean, people are now talking about mounds, but not necessarily, like, say, the electromagnetic energy that might be pulsing at them. But, you know,
right.
Before we get too far into energy, you know, I should probably just start at the top and have you explain more about what mounds are and maybe an overview of your research about these Native American mound sites.
Okay. Well, all right, so I'll get into it. Let me explain how I got into it, and then I will kind of go over American mounds, but I'll mention others in other countries. So I got into it quite unexpectedly in a very weird way, and I'll try to make this story pretty short. Back in 1982, that's when I got my doctorate, and then I immediately started a book I always wanted to do, and that was a follow-up book to Carl Jung's last book that he published in 1959. And it was called Flying Saucers, Carl Jung, Flying Saucers.
Mm-hmm.
And no one had ever done a follow-up book to Carl Jung's book, so I did that. It was called The Archetype Experience. It came out in 1984. So I finished it very early in 1982, that book, and then I was starting the process of sending it off to publishers, which back then they took a lot of time, you know. And so I got rejections and rejections, and it took a while to find a publisher that would put it out. During that time, while I was waiting, unexpectedly, out of literally nowhere, I started having dreams. And in those dreams, I was standing on Indian mounds. I would take a picture of the mound, and then I would be on another mound, and I would take a picture of the mound, and another mound, and take another picture. And this went on. My wife and I have talked about it. We think it went on at least 5 nights. It's possible it was 7. It was a recurring dream. I woke up every morning wondering what the heck is going on here. I did not know what an Indian mound was then. To my knowledge, I'd never been to one or seen it. I basically thought that mounds were little heaps of earth where, you know, they'd lay a body on the ground and then cover it with dirt. That's what I thought. And, again, I'd never been to one. So then what finally triggered the whole thing is my wife and I saw a large spider that had a design on it in our bedroom. And we could not, this was immediately after those, that series of dreams of me being at Mounds. And we could not find this spider. It took off. We could never find it. And I decided we would go to a mound site in Memphis that has a museum called Chukalisa. I had never been to it. The University of Memphis runs it. So we went there, and when we got to the site, on the door they had a display sign that had the exact spider that we had seen. So I, I knew then, okay, there's something to this. And almost immediately, that same day, I told my wife, we've got to visit as many mounds as we can, which we started doing week after week. We do this all the time, go all over the country to mound sites and get photos. That was the initial thing. And then I got the idea that I'm going to do a encyclopedia of Native American mounds, the ones that still existed. So that's how it started. I will say this, in 2000, it took me, I mean, I started this in 1983 is when I started the Mound Project, and it was 2008 or so when I said, okay, if I'm ever going to write this encyclopedia, I need to do it. I'd already written several books about Indian mounds, but not the encyclopedia, and I decided that it's too much work. It'll never sell. It's going to be a huge waste of time. Nobody's going to ever buy this. So I made that decision, and I shoved the project aside to do other books. And that night, I had this nightmare, and in the nightmare, I was surrounded by the ghosts of Native Americans that were screaming at me and pleading with me and calling me, saying that I was a liar who had a forked tongue and that I had promised them that I was going to write this book about Indian mounds. And they said, literally, they said, you're just like all white men. They said that. So you speak with a forked tongue. You make promises you don't keep. I got up the next morning. I told my wife, I've had this horrible nightmare, and I'm going to do the book. And I did it. I've since done a second version, and I'm now working on the third edition of it. And I've never had the dream again. So that's how I got into it. So that's my story of getting into it. When we actually got into it, I spent enormous amounts of time in the library, university library, reading as much as I could about mounds and archaeology. And in those days, my wife and I kind of lived in libraries. We were both professionals. We really liked spending time in libraries, and in those days, that's something that a lot of professionals did. So I found lots of information, mainstream archaeological information, a lot of which was out of date and not true. And again, I didn't know much about mounds, but here's the bottom line. There were mound cultures all over the world. North American mounds are a little different from others, but they are all over the world. But the oldest mound known in the world right now is in Louisiana. It was probably a burial midden mound. It's on the campus of Louisiana State University in Baton Rouge. And it is dated to 9,000 BC. So it's 11,000 years old, which is really astonishing. The oldest mound before that was in South America, and it was dated to 8,400 BC. By contrast, the oldest mound in Egypt, mounds preceded the stone pyramids in Egypt, and the oldest mound, I think, is 7,400 B.C. I know it's 7,000. It might be 7,300, but I believe it's 7,400. And then there's an older mound in Turkey that goes to almost 8,000 B.C., but the oldest ones in the world are in Louisiana, of all places. So there are different kinds of mounds, and they went through this long, long sort of evolution. So they started out rather small. They got increasingly large. So we started around 9,000 B.C. By 5,000 B.C. or so, they started building these conical, which is like a cone-shaped heap of earth, conical mounds, most of which were burial mounds. Some of them have stone chambers and stone tombs inside. But by about the year 1000 then, they started building gigantic burial mounds. And by that, I mean some that were almost 100 feet tall, 300, 400 feet in circumference. Some were even larger than that. some of the burial mounds, those giant ones, are called Adena mounds. They have huge tombs made out of stone and made out of huge logs and slabs of stone as roofs. Those held the remains of probably very important people. Often they were fairly large. I mean, there's this thing about giants in the mounds that a lot of people believe in. And there were quite a few 7-foot-tall skeletons found in these mounds, particularly in the Adena mounds, the very large burial mounds that had the tombs in them. So the Smithsonian actually found 17 of those in the late 1800s during a project they did. And since then, about another dozen were found by other archaeologists up to the 1970s. And pretty much after that, excavation of a lot of the mounds really just stopped. It stopped in 1989 and 90 because of new laws. So that is another kind of mound. Then they, these large burial mounds of the Adena, evolved into what's called the Hopewell. The Hopewell appeared to be people who came from the west, came into the areas that were already inhabited by mound-building populations. They assimilated, and they started adding what I'll call earthworks. Geometric earthworks that are gigantic formations of earth. Sometimes they're long linear lines of earth. They made squares out of them. The walls of the squares would enclose like 10 to 15 acres or so, and then the walls themselves could be anywhere from 3 feet to 15 or 20 feet high, forming this outer square. Now, those aren't forts. They did make forts. And that's another thing that happened about the same time. They're called hilltop forts. They're found in Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Tennessee, Kentucky. And in Georgia. They're usually on the top of very steep mountains. The top is usually flattened. And then they built these huge stone walls and earthen walls along the outside edges of the rim at the top of it. And those walls could be 50 to 60 feet high in some cases. I mean, it's just astounding. So they built these forts. They built earthworks. Some of the earthworks were gigantic octagons that enclosed like 50 acres. Perfect circles were made. And when I say a perfect circle, imagine you're going to make a levee. And I'm using the term levee, meaning it's the wall of earth that goes along a river that floods. So that's what earthworks look like. But in some cases, like in Newark, Ohio, they built the largest geometric earthworks known to exist or be ever made in the world. The ones in Newark are just absolutely incredible. There's a circle and an octagon. There is a 30-acre circle that has a huge bird effigy in the center of it. Then there are these parallel walls of earth that are 160 feet wide. So you've got two walls of earth and then a flat walkway that's 160 feet wide between these two walls. And those walls run 56 miles to Chillicothe, Ohio, where there is another circle and octagon formation. And there are loads of these around the country. And that is the largest one known to exist in the world. At the same time, they started building these effigy mounds. So, I mean, it gets very complicated. There's a lot of different kinds of mounds. Serpent Mound is the most famous. It's like a quarter-mile long effigy of a serpent on the top of a hill. And it's basically, it's a mound. It's made out of earth, but it looks like an uncoiling snake.
So great. Do you know about how old Serpent Mound is? Because I've heard that is a very ancient site.
Well, okay. So Serpent Mound is unbelievably controversial, mainly because Graham Hancock made a series on Netflix about America and about the Younger Dryas event 10,000 or some so years ago. And Hancock, because he doesn't believe what they believed, they wouldn't let them go up and film on Serpent Mound. But it's the problem with the belief here is this. Serpent Mound was initially dated to around the year 3400 or so. And then later in the 1990s, the head of Ohio Archaeology reinvestigated an area of Serpent Mound. And then when they pulled some charcoal out of it and redated it using carbon dating, and it was dated to around the year 1000. So that's a big difference. So later another group came in and dated it back to the original, 1-300 BC or AD, somewhere in that range. And the archaeologist that found it dated to around the year 1000 or so, he said, well, I really don't know what we dated initially. But officially, right now, they say it was made around the year 1000, but I don't believe that. I think it was made quite a bit earlier. I'm sorry, why?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. So, yeah, well, I think when I visited Serpent Mound, that site seemed extremely ancient to me. A really powerful site, too.
Oh, it is,
We need to take a break right now, but we're going to be right back with our guest, Dr. Greg Little, where we're going to continue talking about, the ancient culture here in North America. You are listening to the Crystal Quest Show on HealthyLife.net. Positive Talk Radio, and we will be right back.
You've never read a crystal book like this one. Chintamani Crystal Matrix is Happy Hara and John Dennis Govert's new book, and it is filled with so much information it'll rock your crystal world. Discover how to intentionally use gemstones. Find out all about your own wish-fulfilling gem that can bring you your deepest desire directly into this world. But that's just the start. Get your copy of Chintamani Crystal Matrix at innertraditions.com or at amazon.com, or order it from fine bookstores everywhere. ChintamaniCrystalMatrix.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Okay, I know that you have heard about astrology, but what about using crystals and astrology together? Well, that exists. It's astrogemology, and you're in luck because Happy Hara does just that. Happy presents you with crystals, stones, and gems that align with your unique zones and planets in your natal astrology chart. But it's even better than that. She teaches you how to use them to empower your life. Set up your appointment today. Visit ChintamaniMatrix.com, go to the services page, and just email happy. That's at ChintamaniMatrix.com.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
John Dennis Govert, yogi, guru, and ordained Tibetan Lama, has been doing traditional astrology readings for over 40 years. He can help you manifest your own happiness and navigate the timing of the best periods for pursuing the opportunities available to you throughout the year. You can make informed choices. Get the support you need with your own astrology reading from John Dennis. Visit ChintamaniMatrix.com. Go to the services page. Email John Dennis directly to schedule your appointment. That's at ChintamaniMatrix.com.
Reach your health and fitness goals. Whether you want to lose weight, learn to dance, build muscle, or just live healthy, Beachbody gives you unlimited access to the nation's most popular fitness and weight loss solutions. Visit our advertiser page and click on Beachbody now.
ChintamaniMatrix.com is your source for all the up-to-date things happening with crystals, crystal intention coaching, free guided videos on meditation programming and clearing crystals, and even a monthly New Moon Crystal blog to help you clarify and manifest intentions in the right way and at the right time. So visit ChintamaniMatrix.com, and while you're there, sign up for the mailing list so you can receive monthly crystal intention updates. That's ChintamaniMatrix.com.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to the Crystal Quest Show on HealthyLife.net, Positive Talk Radio. and we're resuming our conversation with Dr. Greg Little, and we're going to move it in a slightly different direction, but I want to talk about an important thing that came up in a book called Path of Souls that Greg wrote, and another one in the Origins of the Disciplines, and probably other books as well. But I think it's important. I think it's a really stunning concept that people need to understand. And then I'd like you to sort of connect that back to our earlier conversations with mounds.
Sure. Okay. Well, there was the very next group that started after the Hopewell are what's called the Mississippians, and something happened around the year 1000 or so, and everything changed. Suddenly, they started building these massive platform mounds, some of which would have, like Cahokia was mentioned in the introduction. Okay, so Cahokia had over 120 mounds itself, and it was really the focal point of the entire Path of Souls iconography and belief system. But they spread that all over the country, and there are just massive, massive mound sites around that are Mississippian. So that's why I started out by saying we're seeing thousands of years of history here, and there's probably a million mounds remaining in the United States today. But the Path of Souls idea is apparently what drove the building of these gigantic mounds, the platform mounds. And it's basically about the death journey. So the priests had figured out, the priests of the mound builders, the shaman, medicine people, whoever the elite were, they had figured out a way to get the populace to believe in this death journey. And the idea is this, that we all have two souls. This is where it starts. One is called the life soul. They recognized that the body and the soul were not the same thing. The soul inhabited the physical body. But the physical body itself, as does all matter, physical matter, has a soul because everything is made of spiritual energy. So the physical body does itself have a soul. It is called the life soul, and it animates the body. It's what gives it energy. Then we have what most people would consider the soul. It's kind of an etheric sort of entity which contains our memories, our personality, that kind of stuff. That is what's in this free soul. So the free soul came from what they called the other world, which is outside of the sky world, which we view every day and night. So the idea with the Path of Souls journey is to send the free soul back to the sky world, but it had to be done at a specific time, it had to be done in a specific way, and it involved all sorts of interesting rituals. So basically, bones were stored until the winter time, which is when the Path of Souls journey took place. It was usually around the winter solstice, and what they would do is at the time of the winter solstice, people would come together to mound sites. They would put the bodies or what remained of the bodies on these crematory mounds, which would be a very large mound that has been used repeatedly. They'd put the bodies on. They would start these fires at night. There were hallucinogenic substances. This is all well documented now. I'm actually kind of disappointed that there were so many hallucinogens used, but we know what they were. We know the containers that they used to put these various substances in, because they found the actual containers inside mounds. And then chemical testing has shown us what was inside of those containers. And that's why we know that they were using things like DMT, dimethyltryptamine, for very short-term hallucinogenic experiences, best way to put it. So the soul took this journey to the sky roughly at, well, early morning, right before the sun would come up. It would take a leap of faith to the west, and it would aim itself at what they called the Hand constellation. And they saw a hand dangling in the western horizon. In the palm of the hand was what they called an ogi. O-G-E-E, which looks a lot like an eye. When you see the hand on their iconography, a symbol of it. It looks kind of like an eye in the hand, like the Hamsa symbol, but it's not the same thing. So the hand was actually the constellation of Orion. The eye is Orion's nebula, which is known as Messier 42. The soul would leap into Orion's nebula as an ogi, and it would tuck itself inside. And remember, this took place just before the sun came up. And they knew that the sky sort of rotated, that's what they thought, and that the hand then and the soul would make a trip through the underworld, under the earth, and then it would come up the next night on the eastern horizon. Then the soul would hop out of that ogi after safely traversing the underworld. It would get on the Milky Way and start to the north. It would have all kinds of trials and tribulations as it moved to the north, and eventually it would meet a judge. The judge was a giant raptor bird at the fork of the Milky Way. That is the Cygnus constellation. If it passed the trial that the judge had of it, it was then allowed to go through another ogi, a portal. This would really be a portal back to the other world, which would be our concept of, well, be the Jewish concept of the guf, if you're familiar with that. It's like the container of souls. So that's where the souls went. That is the belief. In the rituals that they did, they often encountered beings. I'd mentioned earlier that the Testasis ceremony done by the Cheyenne tribe out near the Medicine Wheels in Wyoming. And they would have these ceremonies where they used some hallucinogens, but they also supposedly could physically manifest beings and spiritual beings. They called them various names. I couldn't even pronounce them if I tried, but there were four or five different kinds. They look like energy beings. The same thing is found in some of the ethnographical literature from in discussions with very early shaman, like in the 1600s and even 1600s, 1700s by the ethnographers. And in our book called and I wrote about it. Yeah.
So you're going to connect this idea right to the time beings, right?
Yeah. Andrew and I thought a lot about what do we call it. I came up with the term time beings, T-I-I-M-E, and it stands for temporal or transient intrusions of intelligent manifesting energy. These are a type of energy that appears somewhat spontaneously. We believe we know the source of the energy. When they appear, they're electromagnetic in nature, but they're basically plasma formations. We actually wrote a lot about the Navy's research with these plasma formations. When you get close to these, when you get close to them, you have mental effects. They do affect you mentally. Our brain.
Okay.
Brain
well, let's explore that, Greg. Let's explore that in our next section, because that would be a perfect way to encapsulate it. I want to remind everyone that are listening to the Crystal Quest Show on HealthyLife.net, Positive Talk Radio.
Okay, I know that you have heard about astrology, but what about using crystals and astrology together? Well, that exists. It's astrogemology, and you're in luck because Happy Hara does just that. Happy presents you with crystals, stones, and gems that align with your unique zones and planets in your natal astrology chart. But it's even better than that. She teaches you how to use them to empower your life. Set up your appointment today. Visit chintamanimatrix.com, go to the services page, and just email happy. That's at chintamanimatrix.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
John Dennis Govert, yogi, guru, and ordained Tibetan Lama, has been doing traditional astrology readings for over 40 years. He can help you manifest your own happiness and navigate the timing of the best periods for pursuing the opportunities available to you throughout the year. You can make informed choices. Get the support you need with your own astrology reading from John Dennis. Visit chintamanimatrix.com. Go to the services page. Email John Dennis directly to schedule your appointment. That's at chintamanimatrix.com.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
ChintamaniMatrix.com is your source for all the up-to-date things happening with crystals, crystal intention coaching, free guided videos on meditation programming and clearing crystals, and even a monthly New Moon Crystal blog to help you clarify and manifest intentions in the right way and at the right time. So visit ChintamaniMatrix.com, and while you're there, sign up for the mailing list so you can receive monthly crystal intention updates. That's ChintamaniMatrix.com. Get high-quality glasses, sunglasses, and prescription lenses at eyeglasses.com. Choose from over 250,000 items and 400 brands. Already have frames? Get replacement lenses. It's easy. Go to our advertiser page and click eyeglasses.com. You've never read a crystal book like this one. Chintamani Crystal Matrix is Happy Hara and John Dennis Govert's new book, and it is filled with so much information that'll rock your crystal world. Discover how to intentionally use gemstones. Find out all about your own wish-fulfilling gem that can bring you your deepest desire directly into this world. But that's just the start. Get your copy of Chintamani Crystal Matrix at innertraditions.com or at amazon.com, or order it from fine bookstores everywhere. ChintamaniCrystalMatrix.com.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to the Crystal Quest Show on HealthyLife.net, Positive Talk Radio, and our special guest today, Dr. Gregory Little, and we're talking about a fascinating subject. But before we do that, I want to ask you, Greg, where can people get a hold of you and find out about your books and such like?
The best way to find me is to get on Twitter. That's the truth. Just put in my full name. You can also just Google me. But use my full name, Gregory L. Use that middle initial, Little. Gregory L. Little, and you'll find me. You'll find my Avida and books and everything else. But Twitter is where I do most of my work. I'm also on Facebook, but I don't post much about mounds on Facebook anymore.
Oh, okay. Great. All right. That's easy enough for people to get to you, so
yes,
why don't you continue on with the time beings?
Well, yeah, okay, so like I started with, initially my first book was really about UFOs, and it was a follow-up to Carl Jung, and I never came to the conclusion in my research with UFOs. I've written probably 5 books about this topic. I never concluded that aliens are actually visiting. Now, I do believe that they probably have through some sort of remote surveillance, which is what Carl Sagan actually suggested. Carl Sagan, the greatest skeptic of all time, said that aliens have probably monitored Earth 10,000 times. And that was in 1963 that he wrote that in a scientific journal. But he's not saying that they're physically going back and forth. But, so I do believe in that. But I never believed in, you know, the UFOs being aliens, despite the fact that there are all these cases like the contactees in the 50s and 60s who said things like, you know, it was nighttime, they live on a farm, and a flying saucer seemed to land out back, and Nordic-like beings came out. One of them handed a guy a pancake. That's a true story, Joe Simonton. And there's a lot of others where they would come out and simply say they're from maybe Mars or Jupiter or Clarion or some other missing planet. And they would say, you humans are destroying yourselves with nuclear energy and you're polluting yourselves to death and it has to stop. That's what they said. And those, even Carl Jung was impressed by some of those cases. He believed that they were not all fake, and I'm pretty sure they weren't all fake either, including the abductees that then started in the late 60s and early 70s. So I've studied a lot of the abductees. I know Whitley Strieber pretty well. I've talked to him many, many times. Been on his show, I think, 9 times. And even Whitley isn't sure that these are aliens. So I know that there's something that manifests and appears, and that usually appears in light. That's where Andrew and I started from, and this was in the 80s that we came up with this theory. Independently, we didn't know each other at that time, but we both thought that they are being formed by natural earth energy, tectonic strain, which means the, like where you have fault lines running, which they're everywhere, the two sides of the fault lines are grinding together or simply pressing together, and that produces a huge electrical charge that has to go somewhere. It discharges in the air following the fault lines and becomes a plasma. And so plasmas have been studied now in laboratories. We've always thought that plasmas are the fourth state of matter. They're highly electrically charged. They are superheated balls of gas. That's one way to think of them, but they're more than that. They have this giant electromagnetic field around them, an electromagnetic shell. They begin pulling in physical matter, mainly dust. The U.S. Navy's reports on plasmas in their articles and reports about UFOs, they call them dusty plasmas or exotic plasmas because for unknown reasons they're pulling in physical matter. And when the energy to the plasma ceases, their electromagnetic field ceases, and the physical matter that's been pulled in just dissipates. It falls apart. So we call these time beings, T-I-I-M-E. Again, it means transient intrusions of intelligent manifesting energy. And new research by physicists, articles, the journal articles and physics journals, have said that plasmas do interact with us. They appear to replicate themselves, much like, or they called it reproduce, like humans reproduce. They believe that if they're sustained long enough, that is, given enough energy, that they become sentient. That is, they're a different form of life. In fact, that's why they were named that. They were named plasmas because they were very similar to human blood plasma. So that's the story of them. We believe that is the key to the entire UFO field. We believe that is the key to people having interactions with, you know, unexplained beings. It goes back to biblical times. We talk about Emanuel Swedenborg interacting with these beings for some 28 years. Swedenborg, one of the famous scientists of all time, he interacted with them and wrote about them. So that's what the time beings are.
Oh, that's fascinating. Well, there's more, you know, research coming out, and Robert Temple wrote a book on the new science of heaven, which is, you know, centered around exactly what you're discussing.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, it's coming out into the public, and we're back to the ether in a way.
we actually are. We have gone almost full circle. And scientists, I remember back when I started, the skeptics used to put out this thing of this list of how to tell if you're talking to a crackpot, and one of them was if they were talking about unseen forces, or if they were talking about energy, subtle energies and all that. And so now we know there are unseen forces. We know these unseen forces do interact with us mentally. We know that electromagnetic fields do produce a mental effect with us. It can actually be quite negative depending upon the strength of the field. We have no idea what we're doing with, like, the 5G cell phone technology. We don't really know. We've created an electromagnetic cesspool everywhere because the Earth's ambient. We believe that in order to connect in a balanced way, forces, you have to really not be in electromagnetic fields. you have to be in the Earth's ambient field, which the Earth has one. It's called the Schumann resonance. So you tune yourself to that when you're out in the open, and you can actually connect to these forces.
Wow. Well, I want to really thank you for, I mean, you dropped a lot of gems on us today, and we're going to have to, like, follow up on it. And you have all these wonderful books that I encourage everyone to look at, and you've got things on YouTube, right, that people can listen to.
I do.
So I do want our audience to, like, follow up on it if this is at all of interest to you. So thank you very much for being here today, Greg, and sharing with us. And I want to remind our viewers that you are listening to the Crystal Quest Show on HealthyLife.net, Positive Talk Radio.
John Dennis Govert, yogi, guru, and ordained Tibetan Lama, has been doing traditional astrology readings for over 40 years. He can help you manifest your own happiness and navigate the timing of the best periods for pursuing the opportunities available to you throughout the year. You can make informed choices. Get the support you need with your own astrology reading from John Dennis. Visit chintamanimatrix.com. Go to the services page. Email John Dennis directly to schedule your appointment. That's at chintamanimatrix.com.
More exhilarating talk. HealthyLife.net.
Chintamanimatrix.com is your source for all the up-to-date things happening with crystals, crystal intention coaching, free guided videos on meditation programming and clearing crystals, and even a monthly new moon crystal blog to help you clarify and manifest intentions in the right way and at the right time. So visit chintamanimatrix.com. And while you're there, sign up for the mailing list so you can receive monthly crystal intention updates. That's chintamanimatrix.com.
Expanding your mind. HealthyLife.net.
You've never read a crystal book like this one. Chintamani Crystal Matrix is Happy Hara and John Dennis Govert's new book, and it is filled with so much information that'll rock your crystal world. Discover how to intentionally use gemstones. Find out all about your own wish-fulfilling gem that can bring you your deepest desire directly into this world. But that's just the start. Get your copy of Chintamani Crystal Matrix at innertraditions.com or at amazon.com, or order it from fine bookstores everywhere. ChintamaniCrystalMatrix.com.
Uplifting talk. HealthyLife.net.
Okay, I know that you have heard about astrology, but what about using crystals and astrology together? Well, that exists. It's astrogemology, and you're in luck because Happy Hara does just that. Happy presents you with crystals, stones, and gems that align with your unique zones and planets in your natal astrology chart. But it's even better than that. She teaches you how to use them to empower your life. Set up your appointment today. Visit chintamanimatrix.com. Go to the services page and just email Happy. That's at chintamanimatrix.com.
Where positive people and radio unite. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to the Crystal Quest Show on HealthyLife.net, Positive Talk Radio. And the section we're going to do today is our usual monthly visit into the mineral and crystal world. And today's crystal is connected with the 14th degree of the sign of Cancer. And so Cancer is the cardinal water sign. It's water in motion from the mountains, waterfalls, you know, rushing water anywhere. It has a lot to do with, you know, the home, clan, connection to the earth, your nuclear family, the food you eat. But it also is the intuition, in a way, that'll help, that helps guide us through things. And it also can be emotions, which can get in the way of the intuition. So, the crystal that is connected to it today is rainbow obsidian, and it's an important crystal because it's connected to lava and all sorts of, you know, violent, born of violent conditions. So we're going to have Happy discuss that and give us a little bit more info about what it is and where it comes from and what it's good for.
Yeah, thank you, John Dennis. So I want to kind of start off by saying that the water sign of Cancer is a cardinal sign. And sometimes the crystals that get associated with these degrees are all about bringing in another elemental energy to balance the sign. So since it's cardinal water, you know, the obsidian, which is black volcanic glass, has an imprint of a very deep volcanic fire energy. So what it's doing is it's bringing in cardinal fire from Aries. And obsidian is a very strong Aries kind of energy because obsidian has been used in, for tools and for arrowheads, you know, for thousands and thousands of years. It's one of those, it's found in ancient sites throughout the world. It's found at mound sites. You know, humans have a very long history with using obsidian as a tool. And, of course, using it like as an arrowhead or a tool has a very strong Aries kind of energy. And so obsidian has also been used for clearing and for protection, even like, say, protection from spiritual entities that could be negative. Or, you know, it's also used spiritually for cutting etheric cords or cutting negative attachments. So how it could be very useful for, like, say, water signs such as Cancer is, you know, cutting, you know, emotional cords or attachments that might be difficult for certain water signs to actually disconnect because they feel like everything is connected. And, of course, everything is connected, but sometimes we have to disconnect from negative attachments and purify and clarify. So since Cancer is also connected with the summer solstice, because the first day of the summer solstice is the first day of Cancer, I think then also obsidian is very good for, like, say, if one is, you know, preparing to initiate the summer, okay, and the activities that go with that in some type of a ritual, you know, obsidian is actually a very, very useful tool to have around for purification and for protection. Now, the specific crystal is rainbow obsidian. So obsidian is a lot of different types. What happens is obsidian is volcanic glass. The lava starts to cool so rapidly that there's limited crystal structure. So obsidian is technically considered an amorphous crystal. Now, that doesn't sound that exciting, but when you kind of think about it, amorphous crystal kind of means that you're working with maybe a little bit of chaos energy, transformation energy, that it can adapt to different circumstances. Since it's not highly structured, it can work with non-structure, okay? Maybe it's good for even dissolution or dissolving things or working with energies that are in transformation. It can be more adaptive. The rainbow obsidian is actually a black obsidian glass that has a trace amount of magnetite embedded in the glass structure. And then this causes an iridescent rainbow effect. Some of these are really beautiful. A lot of the material actually comes from Mexico. And so the inclusions of, say, black magnetite can give it kind of like this black iridescence. Some other colors like red magnetite can create red and purplish colors. And sometimes it can kind of have almost a portal kind of effect. And then sometimes the Mexican artisans will even carve them into heart shapes and carve around the iridescent colors and make it look like there's a heart inside the obsidian glass. So It lends itself to incredible creativity too in minerals. So I kind of think of rainbow obsidian, since I think of obsidian as kind of like a dark night of the soul kind of crystal, or one where we're working with transformation or working with the darker emotions and trying to transmute them. So I think of rainbow obsidian a little bit like, you know, the angel or the protective guide or the higher self that is guiding us through this darker portal. It's kind of like there's light at the end of the tunnel, okay? Not, no matter what your darkest moment is, there is still, the rainbow is still there, the promise of your resurrection, the promise of your return to your higher self. And so I think this is an ideal crystal for working with the shadow, working maybe with dreams, working with the unconscious, working more with, like, say, shamanic rituals. What I found really interesting is that in the book, The Denisovan Origins, written by Andrew Collins and Gregory Little, they actually talk about obsidian a little bit in the book, and they discuss how it's been found at very ancient sites. And they even talk a little bit about something called microblade technology, where black obsidian was found in some, you know, in some tools, and they think that these tools were used in a much more sophisticated way than what maybe mainstream archaeology is telling us about. And so I find, like, you know, that obsidian is showing up right now. We just talked to Dr. Little about, you know, some ancient, very sophisticated sites and sites. And I just want to remind our listeners that, you know, we just briefly talk about these crystals, you know, at the end of our shows. We do have a monthly blog on our website. Where we discuss the new moon, and we go a little bit deeper into the crystals associated with each of the new moons.
Yes, and we encourage everyone to go there and spend some time reading it and absorbing the info. So thank you very much, Happy, and I want to thank our listeners for tuning in to the Crystal Quest Show. With Happy Hara and John Dennis Govert here on healthylife.net, Positive Talk Radio.